Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The Steelers and the Giants. Now, they did face each other in the first game of that doubleheader, and there were a couple of questions going into the game. Number one, exactly how is Ben Roethlisberger going to look in return from elbow surgery? Number two, another pressing question. What the hell are the Giants doing on national TV? Again? I mean, seriously, does anybody anywhere want to see these guys? They've had one winning season since 2012, yet every single year they get rolled out on national television as if anyone anywhere wants to see them. And no one does. They've been the worst team in the NFL over the past 3 years. It's a fact. Look it up. They've got the worst record in the league over the last 3 years. So they're bad. Like, really bad. How bad? Cleveland went 0-16 during that stretch, and the Giants are still worse. They're that bad. So what the hell are they doing on my TV? And sure enough, they did exactly what you'd expect the Giants to do if you put them on TV. But let me talk about Roethlisberger first. Now, in the build-up to that game, he talked about the jitters. He talked about the nerves in returning after last season ended for him in week two. But the guy had nothing to worry about. Number one, he looked good. Number two, he was playing the Giants. So he finishes 21 of 32, 229 yards, three TDs. Benny Snell Jr. runs wild when James Conner goes out, and the Steelers' offense looked pretty sharp. And nobody is happier about that than Juju Smith-Schuster. Remember last year when his numbers fell off a cliff and then all of a sudden people started to doubt him? Well, he was back last night. He was back to his old ways. There was this TD.
One in the play clock. Roethlisberger back. Here come the Giants. Roethlisberger floats for Juju Smith-Schuster. Touchdown, Steelers. A touch pass and a beauty by Roethlisberger. And Juju Smith-Schuster has the touchdown for the Steelers.
Steelers radio. And if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see the TD was nice, but the TD dance was even better. My guy broke out the Who's Next dance, which is such a legendary move and a reminder of how funny this guy really is. Not so funny last year, but he is funny. He's funny when he's having fun, and he's back to having fun. And to the question of who's next, last night the answer was James Washington. If Steeler fans were looking for a sign of Ben being back, it came in how he executed the two-minute drill before halftime. That's how you knew that Ben was back. Actually, it was about 85 seconds worth of that drill, and it was capped off by this completely absurd catch and run and finish by Washington.
On an empty set, Roethlisberger back, throws underneath, complete. This is James Washington, leaps, and James Washington powers into the end zone. Wow. Touchdown, wow. Steelers.
He was physical. He ran the guy over.
This guy had no business getting into the end zone on that play. Except he made it his business to get into the end zone on that play. He caught the ball at the 10. He had a couple of Giants in front of him. He had one coming from behind, and he took them all on. Refused to go down. Was not going to be denied. An incredible moment for the Steelers and extremely humiliating for the Giants. I wish I could say that was the only embarrassing moment for the Giants, but you know that's not the case. It never is with the Giants. And this is why it's hard to figure out exactly how good the Steelers were last night. How good they are coming out of last night. I mean, are they that good or are the Giants just that bad? And as always, the answer is yes. They did look good. Ben needed a bit of time to knock off some of that rust. But for a guy coming back from serious elbow surgery, he threw it pretty well. The line did get banged up. Connor did go down with an injury. But Snell Jr. stepped up with 19 carries for 113 yards. Juju had a couple of TDs, which nearly tied his output for all of last year. He had that critical fumble recovery, and he was back to being himself, back to celebrating, back to having fun. And yes, the defense did look dominant. But again, that defense was great last year. Roethlisberger said that that might be the best defense that they've had since he's been there. I mean, maybe. Maybe. That's saying a lot. But who am I to say that he's not right? Who am I to say Ben is wrong? But I am the guy to say that that unit did it against the Giants. So until we see it against an actual NFL team, maybe you hold off the best you've ever been around platitudes, big dude. I mean, yes, I'll give you this. They did completely shut down Saquon Barkley. Yes, the defense did look good. But if you look good against the Giants, does it even really count? Not really. Not until I see that against somebody who matters, because the Giants still don't. The only ones who matter less than the Giants are the Jets. Now, if that sounds like I'm being harsh, or if that sounds like I'm being unfair to the Giants, I would argue the Giants are being unfair to everybody else who had to watch that game, because they're just not good.
Not good.
Below not good.
Below not good.
Hey, remember last year when everybody was looking to crown Daniel Jones after his first NFL game last year? You remember that, right? You know, the Danny Dimes mania. You remember, right? I know I do. It was a stretch at that time, and now it seems even more whack right now, especially when you see some of what he did last night. Now, there was some good, like this TD to Darius Slayton.
Jones in a play fake. Deep ball down the middle of the field, looking for his receiver, and he's got him for the touchdown. Darius Slayton on the post, and the Giants get their first touchdown of 2020. It's a 41-yard strike. Jones to Slayton.
So that's Giants radio, and at that point, the Danny Dimes Nation was coming out all over again. Problem is, Danny Dimes often rolls with his broham, Danny Turnovers. And DT was definitely in the building last night. There was this pick.
Jones under center as Barkley is the lone setback. Jones back is going to throw underneath, and it's intercepted. What a play by T.J. Watt. Boy, he read Jones's eyes, dropped back, and picked it off. A huge play coming by T.J. Watt.
It was. It was that. So maybe you want to give Jones a break on that, because that was a hell of a play by Watt. Except you cannot excuse him or give him a break on the next one. On New York's first drive of the second half, the Giants get the ball on their own 9. They put together a monster drive. 18 plays all the way down to the Steeler 4. And on the 19th play of that drive, 2nd and 3 from the Steeler 4, D turnovers did this.
Jones rolling out now under pressure, looking, going to float one up, and it is going to be picked off by Cam Hayward right at the goal line. So Cam Hayward, the hit in the backfield, the ball flutters in the air. It's going to be a touchback as Hayward comes up with the interception for the Steelers.
What was that? Seriously, what was that? What was that play call? To have this guy roll to his left and then throw? And what was that decision? Just throw it up in the air? Just throw it up for grabs down the goal line? Cam Hayward picks it off. But any one of 5 Steelers were in position to get that pick. If Cam decided that he didn't want it or wanted to share it with one of his guys, there were 4 other guys in white jerseys who could have grabbed that. And no Giant had a chance. That's the Danny turnovers that we know and love. Back-breaking turnovers when you can least afford it. That's their brand. And let's be clear, those were not INTs made by athletic cornerbacks breaking on the ball or fighting off a receiver. Those were 2 picks by D linemen. I know what you're thinking. If your quarterback is still a turnover factory, why don't you just hand the ball to your Pro Bowl running back? Yeah, well, they tried that. That didn't work too well. Saquon Barkley, 15 carries, 6 yards. All right? That's not 15 carries averaging 6 per carry. That's not 15 carries averaging 6 yards. That's 15 carries for 6 total yards. His longest run of the night was 7 yards. If you take that away, he had 14 carries for a negative yard. At one point in the first half, he had 8 carries for minus 8 yards. He was hit behind the line of scrimmage on 11 of his 15 carries. And we're talking about Saquon Barkley. We're not talking about some clown off the street. This is one of the best running backs in the game. This is their best football player. And he averaged less than a half yard per carry. So now you've got some credit that goes to the Steeler D, but come on, New York. Come on, New York. I thought this was supposed to be the new look New York Giants with Joe Judge. You know, Joe Judge bringing his wacky approach to practice and the genius Jason Garrett dialing up plays. Instead, what you got in the first quarter was a delay of game penalty on 4th-and-1 from their own 40, only managing a field goal after getting the ball on the Steeler 3 and settling for a kick on 4th-and-2. And a lot of post-game spin that Jones really wasn't that bad, that there really was a lot to like about his performance. Yeah, I guess. Maybe. Whatever the hell works for you. Just know that none of that is working for anybody else. And know this, too. If you lose by double digits at home, and your alleged phenom at quarterback throws two picks to D linemen, and your takeaway is that overall, it's not that bad of a night, then you really are that bad of a team. And you're essentially looking up at everybody not named the Jets after week one. I mean, do better. Because being slightly less embarrassing than the Jets is not nearly good enough. Man, how nice was it to see teams back on the field over the weekend? Lucky for us, that was just week one. There is no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. And to add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has millions of bucks in total prizes up for grabs. If you have not tried DraftKings yet, head to the App Store right now because you do not want to miss this. Draft your lineup right now. Feel the sweat like never before. Every run, pass, and catch means more with DraftKings. It's easy. You pick your lineup, you stay under the salary cap, and you see how your team stacks up against the competition. I'm telling you, nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at millions of bucks in prizes. DraftKings has paid out billions of dollars to winners since 2012, so they know a thing or two about cold, hard cash. So download the DraftKings app right now. Use the code ROME, and for a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of bucks in prizes this week. Do not miss out on the week two action. Enter the code ROME. Get a free shot at millions of bucks in prizes with that first deposit. Code ROME. Only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details. He is London Fletcher. London, good to have you on. Before we get into everything, let me first ask you, how are you doing and how is everybody around you doing during this pandemic, London?
Hey, Jim, we're doing great, man. Just, adjusting to what society, has right now. I think it's difficult times for everybody, but we're making the most of the situation. My kids are back in school somewhat. My older two, they're doing a hybrid situation, half virtual, half in school, and then my youngest, she goes every day. So it's some adjustments.
I know that life, London. I know the hybrid situation. We've got a couple in school as well, so I understand that really well. Listen, what was it like to get the season started again on Tops on Sunday? How did that go?
Oh, it went phenomenal. We added Kyle Long to the crew this year, and I thought, man, it was, the best show ever. We had a great chemistry, just a phenomenal show. Deb Gelman, our producer, she put together a really phenomenal rundown, and Adam Shine, he's the best. He's the maestro. He controls everything. We got to talk about football. We talked about the social injustices that are taking place. We talked about the protests. I mean, we talked about everything, but it was a great first show.
It's a great show. It's a great show with a great crew. London Fletcher is joining us. I was going to ask you about Kyle Long, who's a tremendous guy. You and he were talking on Tops, and he was talking about how special Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are, which is true. And then you hit him with, and the Bears picked who? Which made me laugh. Like, when Watson and Mahomes are picked behind him, exactly how does Mitchell Trubisky ever get over that?
The only way he gets over it is if he plays like he played in the fourth quarter against Detroit. If he does that maybe another 15 times in his career, he ends up being a Bears longtime quarterback, and he has to win a Super Bowl. But he's going to be judged by those guys. They'll judge against those guys because they were drafted after him. So that's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, I didn't see that happening. I mean, credit to him for coming back on Detroit the way he did, but he's going to have to do that a whole lot of times before anybody forgets that those guys were taken after him. London Fletcher's my guest. London, as I mentioned off the top, you are the postgame analyst for Washington this year. There has been a ton of change in the organization over the offseason. As a former member of that team, what was it like for you to watch all of that unfold?
When I played for the Burgundy and Gold, for the for the Redskins. I wanted to represent the franchise, the former players, Mr. Snyder, the owner, my teammates. I always wanted to represent that organization to the best of my ability. I took pride in coming out and playing for the fans each and every Sunday. When the changes took place, starting with the name, I thought it was necessary. Here I am as an African American man wanting social equality for us as a people of color, and then if the Native Americans didn't view the Redskins name as honoring them, then who am I to hold on to something that they didn't feel like was an honor? So I applaud Mr. Snyder and his wife Tanya for making a change and making a lot of changes. I thought the hiring of Jason Wright as the new team president, I think that's a phenomenal move. And even if you go back and look, think about even before the name change, the hiring of Ron Rivera as the head coach, that was a home run hit. So a lot of changes have taken place. I think the organization and the franchise is headed in the right direction. I'm really excited for the future and the Washington football team has in its future.
London Fletcher is joining us here in the Jungle. London, when you look back on your time there, like, culture and leadership are words that get thrown around all the time, but you're a guy who made an impact in every locker room that you ever stepped in. As an example, your teammate in Washington, Santana Moss, has said that he changed how he approached the game. What was your approach to the game, and how aware were you that guys on offense were noticing and modeling themselves after you?
I was not aware of it. I think, it was one of the things where I really took a great deal of pride in my approach to the game. So I just went about, my business on a day in and day out basis, just trying to be the best player that I can be, not just for myself, but for my teammates and the franchise that I represented. Santana, for him to say that, I appreciated that. And that's just, I think it's one thing if you're a leader to kind of talk the talk, but you have to walk the walk. And guys respect you for what you do more so than what you say.
We're talking to London Fletcher. London, you mentioned Ron Rivera. Last month he announced that he had been diagnosed with cancer. What was your reaction to that and how he has continued to coach throughout the whole process?
It was it hit home for me for a couple of reasons, and I shared this recently on Tops. My wife, she's actually battling breast cancer currently, and so I know what Ron's up against and what he's facing, and then how he's going to be dealing with this. It's a tough situation anytime you're dealing with cancer. The treatments that he's going to have to go through and he's going through currently is going to be an extremely difficult process for him. And then he's going to be coaching football, and I know the grind that those coaches go through. And so it's a big challenge, but he has a tremendous support system: his wife, the organization, his players, his assistant coaches, the entire organization. Is behind him and supporting him. But it's there are going to be some times where he's already mentioned how his energy level is not not great sometimes, and that's one of the things that my wife definitely dealt with when she went through the chemo, just the energy level and things like that.
No doubt. London Fletcher is joining us, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. Listen, before you go, when you consider everything that has taken place with that organization, it would have been very understandable if the team struggled on Sunday against Philadelphia, especially when they fell behind 17-0. So what did you make of the way they all responded after trailing by 17 and the way they came back?
When they fell behind 17-0, I was like, man, what the heck? This is not a good thing. Here we go again. But what I love was the team takes on the identity of your head coach. And I don't care what sport you play, what sport, it's all, that's how it is. And if you think about Ron Rivera, and we're talking about him and how tough he is, how resilient he is, he doesn't blink. I live in Charlotte. I've known Ron. I've watched his Panthers team. He's not going to blink. He's not going to make excuses. And that's how that team performed on Sunday. No panic. Team was down. Then, somebody made a play. Fabian Moreau, he makes the interception. The next thing it's 27 unanswered points. But it started because of the leader that Coach Rivera is. if you don't have him as a leader, they don't win that ball game. You know, it might be a 30-point loss for the team, you know, without Coach Rivera. But that's a total reflection of him and how resilient he is, how tough he is, and how steady he is as a leader.
So, London, one last thought. Speaking of tough, the defense had 8 sacks, so I know you had to be impressed by that. On the flip side, though, Carson Wentz took an absolute beating in that game. We know that Philadelphia's got a lot of issues on that offensive line. But if you're Philadelphia, how concerned are you when you see your franchise quarterback and a guy who's dealt with injuries in the past get hit that many times?
You know, they should be very concerned. I say, you know, they had a Zoom meeting at Carson Wentz the other day. They had a meeting at Carson Wentz, and it was not a Zoom meeting. You know, there was no social distancing taking place with Washington's defensive line. You know, you gotta understand that the Eagles, they had a situation where Lane Johnson, he was a late scratch. He's dealing with some injuries. Jason Peters was signed to replace their starting right guard. He had to flip over to left tackle because of an injury to Andre Dillard. So that unit, even going into the game, I think they only had about three or four practices together as a unit prior to going into that ball game. Then Lane Johnson was a late scratch. So, you know, the main thing is trying to get healthy, especially right tackle position. They got to get Lane back. He's one of the best right tackles in football. If they don't get healthy, it could be a long year, because we know Carson has a ton of injury history, and he won't survive 16 games if he takes that type of beating on a week-in and week-out basis.
Right. How about one last thing? I've got to own this. Like, I've been on the Browns bandwagon for a while right now, and things are not going so well. Then they bring in Kevin Stefanski, and the hope was he would maximize the talent that they have. Then they go out, and they get hammered by Baltimore in the season opener. So you've got a new head coach. You've got plenty of hope. How tough is it then? I mean, one thing to lose, but to go out and get beaten the way they were, how tough is that for them, and how important is it for them to bounce back right away?
It's extremely tough. I'm from Cleveland. I know all about the history of the Browns. I went back and I looked at the game and I saw, you know, some of the things and how Baker he didn't look great. So there's some concern there. You know, Kevin Stefanski was brought in to get the best out of Baker. Him and Odell Beckham Jr. They were not able to connect on some of the throws down the field. Baker had some accuracy issues. So those things are concerning. Now they have to improve and improve quickly, because they played Thursday night against the Cincinnati Bengals. I will say this: it's early, and you have a new head coach, you have a new offensive system, you have a new defensive system. This wasn't your typical off season in terms of the amount of work you were able to do in off season. No preseason game, so I'm not going to panic just yet, but they must, over the next, I would say, 4 ball games, they have to show some improvement. Otherwise, that fan base is going to start to clamor, and things could get kind of ugly.
That is a good conversation right there. A 16-year NFL vet, a Super Bowl champion, an analyst for Tops on CBS Sports Network, which is a great show, and an analyst for the Washington football team's postgame show. And do not forget, a member of the Washington football team Ring of Fame. London, appreciate you. Appreciate you coming on the show. Great to have you back, London. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, are you craving some protein after a good workout? Don't make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Instead, this time, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. So you might ask, why Old Trapper? I'll tell you why. Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Plus, I know the folks involved. Old Trapper is a family-owned business. They take smoked beef very seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Like, who wants dried out, tough beef in a bag? No one. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal. It comes in 4 amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, which is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, reach for some Old Trapper. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you do not see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper.
What's your beef?
Sunday, it's an NFL on CBS doubleheader. The early games highlighted by an NFC matchup between the Giants and the Bears. And you've got the Broncos squaring off with the Steelers. And in game two, Patrick Mahomes and the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs take on the Chargers. Or you have the Ravens taking on the Texans. It all starts with JB and the fellas on the NFL Today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, Sunday on CBS. And I am making my first appearance of the season. And I'm doing so here in Cali. I will be socially distanced. Not just from 6 feet, but 3,000 miles. So we've never done that before. This shiny studio that they built for me here in Cali. I'm going to do my hit from our studio here in California. So I'm fired up about that. Been communicating with the man, Drew Kalisky, about my topics. And I'm really excited about that. So make sure you check that out. Noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. I will do a hit from this studio. All right, so let me change up on you really quickly and talk some baseball. I think for a lot of you, it might feel like, well, two things. Why are you talking baseball during NFL season and the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs? Why are you talking baseball? And then moreover, why are you talking, quote, regional baseball? Padres, Dodgers. Man, because I'll tell you why. We're talking about the most exciting team, the hottest team in baseball right now, the Padres, going up against the best team in baseball right now, the Dodgers, and they're playing for the division, and it's really chippy. And we're coming down to the last 10 games of a wild, wild year. That's why. I shouldn't have to say so. Let me put it to you another way. Like, if you've ever been to a music festival, then you know how there are multiple bands. They play at the same time, but on different stages, right? So the headliners get the real estate. The artists who were printed up in the smaller font on the flyer are somewhere off to the side playing to a smaller crowd. But if you've ever been to a music festival, you know that the smaller bands off to the side sometimes put on the better show. Sometimes you want to be off to the side and you want to see what's going on over there. Like last night, I can make the argument. The Dodgers and Padres put on a better show than the NFL doubleheader when they were playing back-to-back on the main stage. If you have not been paying attention, then maybe you did not know last night was, in fact, an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object. The unstoppable force now are the red-hot Slam Diego Padres. They welcomed the immovable object, the seven-time defending NL West champ, LA Dodgers, to Petco Park. San Diego riding an MLB best seven-game heater. The Dodgers holding on to a 2.5-game lead in the division with their ace Clayton Kershaw on the bump. Kersh has been nothing short of vintage this year. Maybe the velo's down a bit, but it doesn't matter because this dude has been spinning Uncle Chuck, slinging his slide piece to the tune of a sub-2 ERA, 5 wins, and a career-best whip. And for 5 innings last night, he mowed right through the NL's second-best lineup. Padres righty Denelson Lamet matched him the entire way, though. Halfway through that game, we were watching an old-school pitcher's duel that Kersh was barely getting the better of. And then things went from somewhat respectful and cordial to extremely chippy with a single swing in the bottom of the sixth. Game was 1-0 at that point. Dodgers. And then Padres center fielder Trent Grisham finally got to Kershaw and tied it up with this moonshot.
In the air to deep right field for Grisham. It's gone, and the Padres tie it 1-1. One swing of the bat will get it done. Home run number 9 of the year for Grisham has tied this game off. Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, we got some chirping going on. Trent Grisham crushed this baseball, and he watched it. He was in the batter's box when that ball was struck. There was no doubt about it.
I'd say it's on.
All of that's true. All of that was true. Grisham did watch that baseball. I'll tell you who didn't. Clayton. He didn't even turn around. He knew. Biggest home run in the biggest Padres game in years. And my man styled it. Like he walked off the World Series in extra innings. That was a long stare, a half turn, a Joey Bautista-esque bat flip, some serious chirping and hand gesturing going around the bases. I mean, Grisham, maybe it's just me, but if I didn't know any better or any different, it seemed to me that he pretty clearly mother-effed the Dodgers dugout on his way around the bases. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm wrong. And if I am, I apologize. But I don't think I am. Check the tape. You don't have to be like Vin Scully, lip-reading expert, to know that he hit the boys in the blue with a massive MF bomb. Now, you know where I come out on this, right? I'm all about the new school flair. I'm not about the code. I hate the code as much as the code hates fun. Now, if I want to turn that on its head, if I want to, if I want to look at the other side, is it different because we're talking about Clayton Kershaw, the epitome of class? Is it different if we're talking about Clayton Kershaw and we're talking about Trent Grisham and Clayton Kershaw? I mean, you're Trent Grisham. He's Clayton Kershaw. Dave Roberts pretty much said as much after the game.
You know, I don't mind guys admiring a homer. You know, certainly it's a big game, big hit. Really like the player. But I just felt that to over kind of stay at home plate, and certainly against a guy like Clayton who's got the respect of everyone in the big leagues and what he's done in this game, I just took exception to that because I think that there's a certain respect that you give a guy that, you know, if you homer against him.
You know, so where are we going to draw the line here? Like, are there exceptions to the new rule? Like, if the code sucks, does the code just not suck for everybody? Or does the code suck for almost everybody, but there's still a line you don't want to cross when you deal with a really classy guy like Clayton Kershaw? Or does that not factor in at all? Or is there something to be said about the Dodgers thinking, hey, y'all, you do know you're the Padres, right? You do know you're the Padres. Or is there something to be said for the Padres thinking, the hell we are. Not anymore, we're not. We may have been, but not anymore, we're not. We came into this game, the hottest team in baseball, 2.5 back of you. The hell we are. So where do you come out on this? Like, do you agree? Do you disagree with stunting on a classy future Hall of Famer who's going to go down as one of the best pitchers ever? The Dodgers didn't seem to like that, and the Padres loved it. You know, I can see where Dave Roberts has got his guys back. Because Dave Roberts, I don't care what any of you say, Dave Roberts is a great manager and a class act, and he had Clayton's back. But the Padres, I can also see where they just don't give a damn. Why would they, man? They're coming. They're coming for your heart. And the Dodgers, you know, they could not convert their hate into anything the rest of the way. The Padres, on the other hand, use that moment as fuel. They explode for six more, and they run away with that game 7-2. So where does that leave us? Right now, the Padres are an unthinkable 32-17. They're a game and a half back of the Dodgers. It was not that long ago. Earlier this season, as crazy as this season is, we were talking about the Dodgers being as good as they've ever been. The Dodgers being potentially an all-time great team. I mean, that good. And the Padres are a buck and a half out. They're a game and a half out. But let's be clear about this. Man, the swinging Friars, they don't give a damn. They're not afraid. They're not intimidated. They're loving it. Dodger broadcaster Earl Hershiser, I thought, put it really interestingly when he said, quote, "The Padres are playing for respect. The Dodgers are playing for reputation." There's something to that. I mean, the Dodgers, they got to get it done. They just have to get it done. Padres have a huge chip on their shoulder, and they are running on premium fuel. Everybody knows the NL West goes through LA. The Padres do not give a damn. They're a game and a half out, and they're trying to change it all right now. That's the first Padres 8-game winning streak in 8 seasons. The first time Kershaw has dropped a decision to San Diego in 7 years. In other words, everything has changed. Not only did the Padres get over last night, they literally MF'd the Dodgers in the process. So there's no doubt they're going to carry that into game 2 tonight. Here's how important these games are. At best, the Padres can finish that series with a half game lead in the division. At worst, they're 3.5 back. Massive swing right there when you consider there are 8 games left. None of them are head-to-head with LA. So this means everything to both of those teams. Even if the Padres are ahead of schedule right now, they know the opportunity is right there. And you never know when you'll get it again. Regardless of what happens, man, we saw the birth of a legitimate rivalry. Like, San Diego hates LA, always has, always will. But it's one thing to hate them. It's another to be competitive with them. And they are. We've been waiting on this for a long time. Dodgers v. Padres, LA v. San Diego, reputation v. respect. Hell yeah. Bring it on. Let's play two more.
Yeah.
I love that last night. Loved it. Billy Napier is my guest. Billy, it's great to have you on the show. How are you today?
Jim, thanks for having us. Thanks for covering our team.
It's good to have you back, Coach. Thank you very much. You know, I had Mack Brown on the show yesterday, and we talked about some of the emotions that he was feeling in the lead up to their season opener on Saturday. So let me start right there with you. What kind of emotions were you feeling leading up to that Iowa State game?
Well, I think probably gratitude, man. I think it's been one heck of an offseason. You know, I think our players worked for extremely hard for a very long time under unique circumstances without really knowing if they were ever going to play. You know, and I think the reward for those guys to actually get the opportunity to play, some of the things that we've been through. You know, we lost one of our assistant coaches, DJ Looney, back during minicamp. Hurricane Laura hit our state really hard. So in general, I think our guys have been through quite a bit of an adversity. And it was an outlet for them. It was an opportunity to go play the game they love, and certainly made the most of that opportunity.
Billy Napier is joining us. You know, I think that Mack Brown, in fact, I know he made the same point, Billy, that the players that continued to work without knowing whether or not they were going to play. And then, as you point out, there was so much adversity. You talked about the passing of DJ Looney, who was one of your assistants who meant so much to the players in the program. And then you also talk about COVID, Hurricane Laura, everything else that's happened. How were you able to help your players deal with the grief of the loss of one of the coaches and deal with everything else? What was your message to them throughout the whole thing?
Well, I think the big thing I've learned over life is that the difficult things that you go through, although you may not realize it while you're under that fire, down the road, you're going to benefit. There's going to be so many things that you learn. You know, growth comes through struggle. You know, adversity reveals character. You know, we really challenged our guys to have those tough conversations. If you're not having a great day, you know, we've got great relationships and trust within our program. We wouldn't have been able to do it without being in the moment. You know, we were able to continue to practice, to continue to train. I think it was really good for us to have something to work towards, to be around each other every day. But in general, I think the challenges that have come with 2020 has really galvanized our team, and I couldn't be more proud of them and how they've handled it.
Billy Napier's the head coach at Louisiana. They're coming off that big win over Iowa State, who was ranked 23rd. In fact, Billy, going to that game, the program had never beaten a top 25 team on the road, yet from the outside, it seemed like there was a lot of confidence among your players that you could not only play with Iowa State, but you could beat them. How would you describe the mindset inside the program before that game?
Well, I think we've got a lot of confidence in our process. You know, I think although this offseason has been a little bit unique, we have been able to continue to work. You know, our kids have, you know, you got to commend them. We went about 9 weeks there where we only had, I could count on one hand how many positives we had. So we never had a pause in activity. We were able to stay in great condition. We were able to keep sound fundamentally. And I think in general, this is year three. We're reaping the rewards of all the work that we put into it. We've got a veteran team, and we also added an exceptional group of rookies with our last recruiting class. So we played 15 players in that game the other day. That was their first ever game playing for the Cajuns. So we're still young. We still got a ways to go, and certainly think we can continue to improve.
Billy Napier is my guest. So if you come off a win, a great, great win like that, but you've still got a pretty young squad, I would imagine that you've had a conversation this week about creating urgency and maintaining that focus. What has that conversation been like? What kind of thoughts do you have going into the game against Georgia State?
Yeah, that's spot on. I think the big thing here is, can we handle a little success? You know, can we handle the last couple of days where everywhere we go and town. They're patting you on the back, telling you how great you are. You know, I think we got to get back to work. You got to roll our sleeves up. You know, I think the big thing for our staff, just talking to them today, is we need to use this momentum and this positive energy to create even more intense and more urgency at practice. Really going there today. Today's our first day back at it on Tuesday. So, you know, I hope that we can create that urgency and intensity and really understand that work produced the results, and we got to go back and do it again this week.
Hey, Billy, one more thing. I want to go back and circle back to DJ Looney for a minute because, as I mentioned, he poured himself into the players and he helped create the culture of the program. For those who did not know him, what was he like as a person?
DJ Looney is one of a kind, you know, one of a kind. Just a special soul, man. Just a guy that really had a pulse for people. You know, he knew what to say, when to say it. He had an unbelievable sense of humor, always keeping it light, you know, keeping everybody in great spirits. He also could have a tough conversation with you and with the players. I think in general, just a young, bright coach, very intelligent, a guy that had tremendous relationships. I know he's a close friend of mine. Died at the age of 31 years old, you know, way too young. But I'm going to tell you something. He made the most of those 31 years, made a significant impact on a lot of people, and certainly will be remembered for that.
Hmm. Billy, one last thought. You mentioned a tough conversation. You've used that phrase a couple of times really quickly. Do you feel like the young players today, do they want those tough conversations?
You know, I do. I really do. I think they'll do what you allow them to do. I think they want structure. They want discipline. You know, I think ultimately if they sense that you care for them, that you have a plan for them, and at the same time you can help them improve and make them a better person, student, and player, I think they'll do about anything you want them to. So we try to be consistent and fair, you know, really try to always define the expectations, tell them why we do things. You know, it takes time to earn trust, certainly in, you know, we're a lot further along here being in the third year, but in the very beginning, that's where we started, and it's paid dividends for us.
He is the head football coach at the University of Louisiana, third year there. They're coming off that huge win over Iowa State on the road, 31-14. Next up, Georgia State on Saturday. Billy Napier, my guest. Billy, great to have you back. Good luck this weekend, and good to get caught up with you, Billy.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you covering our team. You have a great day, man. I'll
you
see
too,
you
Billy. Hey, clones, I want to talk to you about Goody's Hangover Powder. Now, do you know about this product? This is incredible. Goody's understands that you cannot afford to let a hangover slow you down. And for a hangover that is really tough, you need real medicine. Goody's Hangover is more than just natural supplements that you've seen before for treating hangovers. With a history that's rooted in analgesics and putting an end to tough pain, Goody's Hangover has the right formula to stop pain fast and to provide a boost of alertness. So now you can have that fun night without worrying about the next morning. And it comes in a tasty berry citrus boost flavor. Toss it back or mix with water. Goody's Hangover. Real medicine for real hangovers. Fast relief with a boost of alertness as well. It's available on Amazon, in Walmart, and at your local convenience store. You know who skated yesterday? Absolutely skated. You know who didn't take nearly the sort of heat they normally would have taken? You know who got over? The LA Clippers. The Clippers should send a thank you note to Roger Goodell and the Shield because they dodged a scud yesterday. Had there not been any NFL on Sunday, yesterday would have been all about the Clippers and the Nuggets. And I'm talking like a full hour or more on this show. It would have been all about the Clippers blowing a 16-point lead in Game 5. And then chasing that by blowing a 19-point lead in Game 6. It would have been about the Clippers going Clipper at the worst possible time. It would have been everybody wondering how the hell a team with two Hall of Fame players, another all-defensive team member, two Sixth Men of the Year, how that team and a great coach managed to blow double-digit second half leads in consecutive games that were both the elimination games. And the word choke would have been thrown around pretty liberally. and I'm not one of those hot take artists who's going to go way out of my lane to call somebody a choker. But that would have been fair. In fact, the only unfair thing is that not nearly enough credit would have been given to the Nuggets for what they did. Because while the Clippers did dodge that bullet yesterday, because they didn't spend the entire day getting hammered in the media, the Nuggets continued to fly under the radar and not get the credit that they deserve. This is as much about them as it is the Clippers, even though the narrative is mostly about the Clippers. The Nuggets are 5-0 in elimination games this year alone. I mean, the phrase tough as hell does not begin to do them justice. They're built for it. Built for moments like this, as their president of basketball operations, Tim Connolly, told me on this show yesterday.
I think that not letting go of the rope has stuck with us. Over the last several years, we've never felt like we're out of it. We're never a team that seems to be overwhelmed by the moment. I also think we're a team that generally has fun. For sure, Nikola, when he's having fun, he's a way better player. So I think it's kind of a liberating way to play the game. Hey, there's pressure, but it's not life or death. Let's go out there and hoop. It's a game, you know. Let's not forget it's a game and see what happens.
This guy gets it, and so does his team and his coach. Like, they showed up in Florida a couple of months back, and they had 8 healthy players. 8 due to injuries and COVID. And now they're a single game away from the conference finals. And not only are they built for this and the pressure of the moment, they are having fun. They're having a hell of a lot of fun doing it. How could you not? Have you seen some of the shots that Joker is making? He's knocking down those rainbows, and guys are breaking out the air guitar on the sideline. Most teams go down 3-1 in a series to the title favorites after they've been in the bubble for months. Man, they're packing their bags. They're going to get the hell out of there. They're ready to leave the bubble and go back home. And they're really going to do that if they're down 3-1 in a series and double digits in an elimination game. Anybody would, except for Denver. And they're not tense, man. They're loose. They absolutely bullied the Clippers in the second half of the last 2 games. LA is getting worked by Jokic on switches. He's playing Montrezl Harrell off the floor. Harrell is the 6th man of the year, and he's getting played right back to the bench. And it's not just the team that everybody expected would be the best defensive team that's blowing huge leads with their defense. Their offense in the second half isn't any better. And there's no better evidence than how LA is shooting when they have open looks. LA made 71% of their uncontested shots in the first half of Game 5, but only 40% in the second half. What's that tell you about them? Uncontested shots. Then in Game 6, same thing. 64% in the first half, 43% in the second half. What's that tell you about them? It tells you that when it gets tough, when the pressure's on, when it's time to finish, when it's time to end the series, they're bricking it on uncontested shots. But let's not confuse this. The Nuggets are not a fun team that overstayed their welcome and is just happy to be there. That's a damn good team. They've got the best offensive big in the league. They've got a budding superstar in Jamal Murray. They've got a culture that works. They were the number 2 seed in the West last year. They were number 3 in the West this year. They've earned everything they have. And now they've earned a Game 7. The Clippers should have never let it get this far. The fact that it has gotten this far has got to worry the hell out of them. And if it doesn't, either they're lying or they just don't get it. Because they should be worried. It speaks to their tendency to get up and nap it out when they've got a lead. Or to have flaws that get covered up because they've got Kawhi and Paul George to bail them out. I mean, good thing to have, right? A couple of future Hall of Famers. That'll erase a lot of problems. The rest of the team can fall asleep or have an off night. And then either Kawhi or PG can carry them to a win. Paul George says, hey, man, we don't need to panic. We are still in the driver's seat.
We're still in the driver's seat. I mean, it's not a panic mode. We got a Game 7. I like our odds with our group.
Yeah, I don't know, Paul. Yeah, I would have that panic button close by. I would know where it is. If you're not going to hit it yet, I'd make sure you know where it is. I mean, I kind of get that, sort of. It is Game 7. You know, if you play that game, if you play that whole game of, well, if you'd said to us before this series, would you take your chances in a Game 7 if you were the LA Clippers and you've got Kawhi Leonard and you've got Paul George and you've got Pat Beverly, and you've got a couple of six men of the year, and any one of them can get hot and win a game seven on their own, would you take your chances in a game seven with them? I mean, sure, I guess. But that's not the argument. What if I were to say to you, would you take your chances in a game seven with them if you had an enormous lead in game five and you let that get away, and then you had a bigger lead in game six and you let that get away? That's a different kind of argument. And we've seen Kawhi do this time and time again, right? We've seen Kawhi make it look easy time and time again. This is why they have this guy. And we've seen Paul George dominate a game at both ends. We've seen what Nick Beverly can do on defense and how he ignites a team on offense. We've seen what Lemon Pepper Lou can do. My question is, what the hell is this team doing in a game seven in the first place? And why didn't these guys finish in game five? And why didn't they finish in game six after what happened in game five? I'm telling you, the last thing you want to do is give a team like the Nuggets any breath or even a moment of life. Because if they have it, they'll take it. Hell, the Clippers know that better than anybody. Go ask the Utah Jazz. If the Clippers turn a 3-1 series lead into a Game 7 loss with that roster and that coach and that owner when they're built to win this second, they'll never live that down, even for them.
Well, but
that's Alvin's suggestion that they're choking. And who's got the karma right about now, man? The Nuggets. Tim Connelly comes in. I don't know, man. I'd be concerned about that. James Kelly wants me to know the Clippers are -7.5. Man, I hope somebody tells that to the Nuggets. Not that they care about any of the outside noise, but they're not getting any respect. -7.5. Why don't we, as Hawk likes to say, stay in market, on topic. We go to Carlsbad, Jose. What's going on, Jose? How are you?
I'm doing great after Padres win.
A good win, too. How are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling great, man. The Padres are playing like champs right now. It's insane. It's got the town talking. Dodgers who?
Yeah. Thanks, Jose. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Jose who? Not making light of it. It came up earlier in the program. So with that in mind, why don't we go to Houston, Texas? Jerome. Hey, Jerome.
Vance Mack, Hall of Famer. Glad to be in. Thank you again for the Vine. I was going to start with the Nuggets, but I'll start with the soap. It is real. I'm in my close to mid-60s. I'm going to tell you what, Rome, what got us in the most trouble is lying. If we got caught in a lie, oh, my God. We had my dad on one side with his belt buckle, my mom on her side with a spatula, and they would say open wide and pile that Dial soap, bar soap, and they would say chew until we tell you not to chew, and we would chew it, and they would say finally spit it out, and they say okay, you're good, wash the rest out. And that's how they washed our mouth out with soap. And it was a lot, and you know, I say it probably happened, you know, I wasn't such a good kid, maybe 10, 12 times, but
hey, Jerome, what does Dial soap taste like?
You think about lying next time. The only other thing I have, Rome, real quick, is the Denver Nuggets. I love the Nuggets, and a lot of people have misconception how they got the term Denver Nuggets. Well, I'm going to tell you, Clone Nation, that at that time, Denver was considered the richest in gold in the United States. If you look at the Capitol building in Denver, which Denver is the capital of the state of Colorado, their Capitol building is laced on the dome with gazillions of dollars of pure gold. And why that is? Because they had the biggest nuggets, they had the biggest thing. But the thing is, people forgot about that. These Denver Nuggets, those Nuggets don't mean gold. They mean Nuggets. And if you look Nuggets up and Google it up, you know what you're going to see? If you scroll down, keep scrolling down, it equals nuts. And that's what the Denver Nuggets have. They've got the nuts to push this thing through. And I just wish they could bottle up and send a portion of it to Houston for our Rockets, who got smashed by the superior Lakers. And I'm so upset I'm out.
Jerome in Houston. John in New York. What's up, brother?
Jim, how's everything going, Jim?
Good, good, John. How are you?
Good. Hip is good. Thank you, Dr. Chisina. Everything is going well. Listen, thanks for taking out the fertilizer truck and handling the New York sports scene, so I'm not even going to touch on that. The Clippers, Kawhi, Paul George, Kawhi's legacy is on the line tonight. You know, everybody wants to compare, you know, him to LeBron and everything like that. LeBron James is the king, okay? And until anybody else, disproves that, I mean, if he loses this game tonight, Kawhi, it would be just as devastating as a loss as it was when he hit that shot when he played for Toronto against the Sixers. And there's really no comparison to LeBron. And L.A. Sports right now is up. L.A. Sports right now is the best in sports world right now. And thank God, you know, I got something exciting to look forward to tonight. And, Jim, thanks a lot for letting this minion share the stage with you. And we'll talk again soon. Thanks a lot, Jim.
You got it, John. Thank you. John in New York.
Hey, John.
Hey, John. Always glad to share the stage with a minion like you. Just kidding, John. We are joined by the WBC champ, Jermell Charlo. Jermell, great to have you on the program. How are you today?
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Really good to have you. So we're about a week and a half out from your next fight. How you doing and how did camp go, or how is it going so far?
All camps are hard. Everything has been great, though. Tremendous work. I've been pushing. I love the heat. It's been hot in Texas. You know, spend a lot of time training in here. Haven't left Texas because, you know, pandemic. You know, but, hey, I'm ready. It's amazing. I can't wait. You know, I'm excited just as well as the fans are. Hey, man, I want to see what my body could push it through.
I like that. That's like that Spartan lifestyle. That's a professional fighter right now. Now, normally I would ask you what it's like to train during a pandemic. You kind of laid that out. You like the heat. But something you said during the PBC podcast I thought was really interesting, quote, "I don't like the food that everybody in the world eats. I want to be different," end of quote. So what is your approach to food, your diet, and training? What's different about it?
Well, everybody likes to wake up and eat eggs and stuff in the morning. You know, I wake up, I ate a red snapper this morning, you know what I'm saying, with some vegetables, because when my day gets started, it gets started a little bit different. You know, I'm started to work, and I want to be at my best during that time. You know, I don't want to wake up and eat breakfast and then try to go into a lunch. You know, I'm getting ready to go have dinner and then have dinner again, you know, and then I'm possibly just munch on some fruit. I'm not one of the type of people that you get hungry and you just eat normal food. I don't eat like that. You know, I don't want to eat these type of foods that the rest of the world eat. That's just what I meant.
Jermell Charlo joining us. I get that, right? If you do the same things that everybody else does, you're going to get the same results. Now, earlier this year, you were talking also about some of the guys that you've been sparring against, and it runs the gamut from small, quick guys to heavyweights. Like, what's it like when you step in against a heavyweight and you hit them with your power? Do they feel it?
Yeah. It's crazy because, you know, I heard a few heavyweights before. You know, I rocked a few of them, but, you know, I didn't necessarily knock them out. But, you know, they're a lot slower, you know, a lot slower than you think, but that's why you mix and match it with some of the smaller guys in a way. Then you start seeing these shots come at you. They like little BBs. Bing, 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 bing. Nah, I ain't got time for that. You know what I'm saying? When the big old guys come hit you, it's like, it feels like, you know, you in a fight, fighting against a heavy-handed puncher with some 10-ounce gloves on, but it feels like that when you got a heavyweight in front of you, you know, but compared to a guy that's with 16 ounces, that's my size, you know, it feels like little buckshots, you know what I'm saying? You know, so, you know, I like to mix and match everything up and, you know, be ready for any and everything that comes my way.
Jermell Charlo joining us. Now, back in December, you beat Tony Harrison out here in Cali to take back your belt and to avenge your loss in the first meeting with him. What was your mindset going into that rematch?
Man, I wanted to prove a point. You know, I'm glad I'm past that because I don't got to prove a point. I'm got to prove a point to myself, but I have to prove to the world, you know, and sometimes you have to do that in life. You got to prove to the world who you are and how you do it. And so this one time that I had to step up and you know, be a part of this worldly thing and show the world why I feel like I'm the best boxer. Now, this fight right here, I want to prove to myself that I'm the best in the world. And it's just past, you know, being the best in the world. It's what, am I the best Jermell that I will be my whole life? You know what I'm saying? And if this is my peaking time and my peaking moments and my prime, like they said, I can't do nothing less than, you know what I'm saying? I got to go harder than I've ever been in my life. And that's just what it's about.
I think that's a great perspective. Like, it's one thing to know that. Two, it's another to know it, but actually follow through on that. Why do you feel like this is the time in your life where you've got to be at the best you've ever been to be the best version of yourself? Where is that coming from?
Well, I mean, because I'm 30 years old now. My opponent is younger than me. And I remember being in the ring with guys when I was 25 and they was 30. And I got to watch the old man, you know, like. And now I'm like, hold up. I'm fighting that younger stud, but he ain't even made it to where I'm, you know, really what I've been through them 5 years. And I feel like that's going to play a big difference, even though we're still young. And, you know, but 30 is just that 30 is just that season, I feel. And then I want to get everything out right now. You know what I'm saying? And I also got that ego of, nah, I could compete with the youngest and I'll compete with the best and I'm the dog and the animal at it. So, you know, by me being a lion in the ring and a lion throughout my regular life, I feel like there's nothing out there in the boxing world that's more vicious than me.
Jermell Charlo joining us. That's the thing, right? Like, I talked to a lot of guys, MMAers, boxers, NFLers. It's one thing to be that dog or that lion on the field, but you just said, I want to be a lion in my real life, too. Like, you have to turn the switch off, right? There's ways to handle things in the ring, and then there's a way to handle things outside of the ring. How are you a lion in your real life? How does that play out?
Because, you know, I'm a provider for my family, you know, like I'm the provider for my family. And, you know, I sit up, I chill, I relax most of the year, fight twice a year. So that mindset is like, you know, when do I got to get up to go eat and go hunt? When that male lion got to go hunt, he bring back something big and vicious, something dangerous, something that could feed the whole family. You only get Thanksgiving once a year. And I'm that guy that got to bring in, you know, that big package for my family, and that's how I do it, through the sport of boxing. And you know, it's other things that I have to do. As far as being a lion, I gotta defend my family, I gotta defend assets, I gotta defend certain things and make the smart, educated business moves, and you know, and so forth. It take a lot to be, you know, at a certain level in your life where people just see money and fame. You know, we humans too.
Jermell Charlo joining us. I love that response. Now, I'm glad you brought up family. Your twin brother, Jermall, you guys are going to fight on the same card on the 26th. It is now known as the Charlo doubleheader. What's it mean to you to have the Charlo doubleheader? How special is that for you and your family?
Well, this is a big moment. This is a big time. It's an opportunity. Not a lot of people in the sport get them. It's like hitting the lottery, man. You gotta know how not to blow it. You know what I'm saying? And this is that time. I ain't blowing my lottery ticket.
All right, so you're going to face the WBA and IBF champ, Jason Rosario, to unify the belts at 154. When you think about Rosario, what kind of thoughts do you have? How concerned are you about him?
I feel like he's a warrior. He come to fight. But, you know, I fight for USA. You know, he's a Dominican that fight for his country. And I feel like I'm the military of America. We're big. We're dominant. We carry a lot of force.
Listen, man, really quickly before you go, I know you have to be off in a couple of minutes, but unification bouts are really rare. In fact, it's only the eighth world title unification fight in the history of that division. What would it mean to not only win that fight, but to unify the belts?
Man, this is a legacy move right here. This is a legacy mark. And I'm putting on a different show right now, because unifications don't come too often, and I'm excited to be able to be a part of this. But I want to just not look at this as a unification. It's just another fight, a big fight where I got to defend my life, put my life on the line.
Right, so last thing, you've talked about wanting to get the bag, not the regular bag, the family bag. Lay it out for me. Just how big is the family bag? How badly do you want the family bag as opposed to the regular bag?
Man, I've been getting a nice bag. I've been like getting a nice family bag. So it's about adding to it, you know, collecting it. So whenever it's time for retirement, you know, you could retire and be happy. We don't have a 401k in boxing. We don't have a union in this thing. It's all business. And whatever, every fight is contracted. Any fight could be your last. So, you know, when it comes down to that, man, hey, I want everything. I want that big one.
Dude, what's for dinner? If Red Snapper was for breakfast, man, what's for dinner tonight?
Man, I don't even know what's for dinner. I got to go ask. I don't even know what's for dinner. But I know I had fish. I've had fish 2 days. Also, I have a steamed lobster, supposedly, about 11 ounces. You know, no butter, though.
Good night now!